Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's Stu Weber at stuweb.com, and it is March the 6th, Monday, 2023. And I have the honor to have Paul Register on with me. He's a whistleblower, South Dakota whistleblower of crimes going against the people here. We call him a U.S. whistleblower, as far as I'm concerned, because of the government should be involved in cleaning up the mess up here. Instead, the shadow government is involved. And this is in South Dakota where this man lives and works. And there's a lot of deaths that are happening on Indian reservations, these tribunals, etc. There's a lot of unusual stuff happening, period. And they're being deprived. Now, I met a guy named Billy Jack. There was a movie made about him. And back in, I think, 72 or 74, whatever it was, back in the 70s. And it was about an Indian, supposedly, that killed two federal agents. Well, what the truth was, his name was Peltier. And I met him in prison as a whistleblower. When I was a whistleblower in jail, they had me locked up illegally and charges dismissed with prejudice. Terroristic death threats against Jewish families in Denver, meaning my ex-in-law, had me locked up and they dismissed the charge. Here was the point. I met him while he was being transferred from Illinois federal prison, maximum, over to the new underground, three stories below ground. You have no human contact. A rail comes and feeds you on a rail and you get out and get your food and et cetera. You got a visitor, you got it by camera. They put people in there to make them go fucking crazy is what it is. And the government does this. Now, he was held there for quite a period of time, later moved over to Florida, which I believe he's in a federal prison down there. But Peltier is innocent. I talked to him, and I had the super spook Otis Johnson in there in the same unit because he was busting the Louisiana governor. The guy that busted John Gotti, that was a New York cop, signed to the CIA, was in there. He was in protective custody. There were some very unusual cats and gators that were in that detention center in Denver because it was the brand new facility. I mean, people were going out the friggin' back door. It was unbelievable. Come in and they were sitting there as a prisoner, but they'd go out the back door. They were actually spying on other prisoners that were in there. It was a totally bizarre situation to watch. But Peltier was accused of killing two federal agents. What he found is Daddy Bush's oil company was getting the oil off the Indian reservation where he was at, down in South Dakota. And they were coming out, and they had to have federal agents read the meter each month to find out what the exact amount of extraction of oil was taken, because that money then is distributed to the members of that community. That means if they live on the Indian reservation, they're entitled to part of the oil proceeds, is what it is. It's divided up among the individuals. Now, Harry finds that these two federal agents are coming out here and they're taking two truckloads of oil out of here, but they're only reporting that there's about 10% of that going out the door. And they're flipping the meter back. And these are two dirty cops, FBI, that were doing it at the time. And it used to be, I think it was the CIA had, they were the ones that kind of monitored Indian reservations. But now, then when Billy Jack happened, or the movie they made about him, they made it look like he killed these two federal agents. Well, he didn't kill them. What he did is he found out these two dirty agents were turning back the meter and they'd been monitoring it for several months. So they went to another FBI jurisdiction in another state and talked to them in person. And as an end result, they assigned two federal agents to go spy on and catch them in the act of the day that they were taking the same date each month, taking the meter readings. So here they are over there doing the meter readings, and these two good FBI agents come approaching them, and they see that they got the meter apart, and they're turning the meter back. Well, fucking, they went to bust them. They got shot and killed, the two good guys, by the bad guys. Then the bad guys blame Billy Jack and somebody else for killing these federal agents. And the whole bit, well, Peltier gets carted off to jail over it. And that's where I met him, was he was being transferred, and he was up there for about a week, and he told me his whole story. I got to know him and believed him. Now, Ramsey Clark, the former attorney general underneath President Kennedy, is his attorney of record. The Something Center out of New York is where he's out of. But if anybody wants to help him and help support, you might get a hold of him, Ramsey Clark, because he is Peltier's attorney and he knows he's innocent. And I even had a gal that was with a Las Vegas paper that did a story on him after I'd met him, and she contacted him and the whole bit and talked to him by phone and the whole bit from prison. She's allowed to do that. Anyway, she did a story on him. But Peltier was innocent, and I see those things, and I've come to know about through attorneys, friends, and others about the atrocities these people have gone through that are on these Indian reservations. Is that about true, Paul?
Yeah. I mean, the amount of stuff that I've seen just in the time that I've been investigating this stuff, it's like, it really stood out to me, because in the beginning of this, I was absolutely naive to all these circumstances. And I grew up in the state of Oregon, and just the general vibe that I had seen to how South Dakotans felt toward Native Americans was vastly different than where I came from. But I began helping these different families with certain situations involving their kids, and was listening to a lot of backstories of how certain families' kids ended up in foster care and whatnot. And that led me to encounter a gentleman who helps with civil rights situations all over the globe. And the gentleman's name was Matthew Virgin. And I'll never forget his words to me, because at the time it seemed almost unfounded to me. But the more that I've gotten into it, the more I realized he was completely accurate with his statement when he said South Dakota's treatment of Native Americans is the worst form of genocide taking place on the planet right now. And I was appalled when I heard that, but I also didn't give it near enough credit to what this guy was saying. But as this situation has got dug deeper, it shows itself, and if you're capable of looking at it, you can see that. I mean, you have so many of these families being fractured by the state pulling the kids out of homes. You have all kinds of Native American women that end up on these databases that you know that they're basically being falling into missing, murdered. You have the vast amount of child trafficking that's going on in South Dakota. So yeah, everything that he had advised me 6-7 years ago was completely on point. And so I just know that in recent months, I've started seeing just a lot of how they've managed to do so much here in South Dakota is by having the state media absolutely controlled. And it's when you have these stories, and as I was just telling you about the most recent one that I learned about, Stu, was you have a gentleman, and his name was Delano White Eagle, and it was literally this last Thursday that Delano was killed in a hit-and-run accident. According to the family member that spoke with me, she later learned that he was in a vehicle when he was struck and killed. But the reason she wanted to reach out to me was because so that I could look to see if I could find any local reports about this hit and run fatality. And I looked, this incident took place in Sioux Falls, so you have all the local TV affiliates, you have the Sioux Falls newspaper, the Argus Leader, and you go and you search, and I believe I found one small 15-second segment about a hit and run. There's no mention of any kind of fatality, and the name Delano White Eagle never came up once, and the only way that it was discovered that it was a hit and run is because that's what the funeral home director conveyed to the family.
Okay, now this is a relative of an investigator, without saying any more, all of a sudden her family member ends up dead.
Yeah. Yep. And so, but in the time that I've been doing this, it's like, she's Native American, but I've learned that you don't have to even, if you're just on the wrong side of the state's interest, they will go to great lengths to help shut down a whole myriad of circumstances where these people are being killed. The way that I even encountered this family member, as we're talking about, I learned of her through another investigation that I decided to take up when I saw a report of a gentleman who was killed 2 years ago in the southern part of South Dakota. He was, his vehicle was discovered on one side of Lake Francis Case, and roughly about 7-8 miles away, his naked body was discovered on the complete opposite side of the lake. And when his body was discovered, he didn't have his clothes, keys, he was missing money, I mean, missing all sorts of stuff.
And robbing
the family began talking with South Dakota DCI. They insisted that this occurrence of him being stripped of everything had to do with animal predation, specifically coyotes stealing his clothes.
Right. Okay, now, I've had you on, you've been to my house a couple times.
Yep.
And we did a series of videos that screwed up because I didn't have a computer that would handle it. Thank God I found me a little cheap $137 out the door at Walmart. Got the latest. At least I can get on internet sites and fix my own. Anyway, and even do some, I'm going to be doing hopefully some split screen next time with you, Paul.
Yeah.
But the deal is you have up on the radio bar, it's the number 2, and I'm changing things around on the website, make it a little easier and simpler, and it's going on right now. But here's the point, is there on the radio bar, there are some shows I've already done with you. Now, we did a couple shows, and there's an hour-long video or whatever, and people can download it and then open it up and play it. It was pretty good size, but you open it up but you laid out a lot of evidence, and you pointed to all these different people who have been tied to the Indian reservations in some way, shape, and or form here in South Dakota that have been murdered. Family members dead, kids dead. I mean, what got you into it was this interest in the kids that you were working with and still work with that are being snatched off these Indian reservations, many of them, and then they drug them up. And why is this? Because of all these trusts and all these foundations, from my understanding, that have been allowed to be set up in the state of South Dakota, that are feeding off the trough of the people of the state of South Dakota illegally to support
them through the nonprofits, because all this money, when they take the Native American children, they basically put them into institutions or foster homes. And so that money comes in from the feds and goes in the Department of Social Services budget. And when it ends up there, in South Dakota, nonprofits are self-policing, so money can get pushed into nonprofits and completely disappear. And it's not just South Dakota that knows that. I'm certain there's quite a few elements outside of South Dakota that come here to set up these nonprofits and basically have their money laundered through these nonprofits, because that money can go practically anywhere and nobody is the wiser. It ends up in the hands of all sorts of people that are affiliated with the trafficking industry, both drugs, human trafficking, and also labor trafficking, now that I think about that. And so all this money goes into these trafficking areas, and essentially the trafficking of they basically finance their own opioid crisis. And so that's how come you see in South Dakota where if someone is dinged for marijuana, they will throw the book at them. I mean, they come out of the woodwork to fight off marijuana. It was a little over 2 years ago, South Dakotans passed the legalization of marijuana, but our legislators got together and created a lawsuit, and for the second time in recent history, they repealed the public vote, and they put it back on the ballot measure this last election, and it fell just short. And it's like they do that because they don't want the competition coming from marijuana, because opioids are their thing.
Okay, now, you found out that this has been going on against Native Americans.
Yeah.
For years.
Oh, longer than I've been around here. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot longer. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
But it happens to be the South Dakota's foe of the tribes, correct? North Dakota?
Yeah. South Dakota, I believe we have 8 tribes affiliated. You have Rosebud, Pine Ridge, Crow Creek, Standing Rock, Landrieu, Yankton, Fort Thompson. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the reservation on Fort Thompson. But
I lived in Yankton. I lived in Yankton one time for about 6 months, remodeled a house for a guy, got in there just before winter hit, left about the end of winter, about 6 month project. Turned out really nice. But, you know, I never noticed, because it's the beginning of the Missouri River. Actually, it starts way up beyond that, but there's a series of lakes that were man-made, Army Corps of Engineers, and they actually fish out of it. One restaurant does in Yankton, and feeds it right there on the dock, your catch of the day. But it's all clean fish, but that's where they start dumping the sewage into the Missouri River at that point. But I never noticed American Indians a lot. I never noticed at all, really, in Yankton. But yet there's a tribe down there, isn't that correct?
Yeah, it's not very far whatsoever.
But there's a lot of unusual buildings down there that the government has something in that tribe, isn't that correct? Question is what is government doing? And government monitors under an Indian agreement, American Native Indian agreement. Now, they monitor like they did an agreement with the Mormons. It was because of my great-great-great-grandfather, Orrin Porter Rockwell, that they made that agreement, because he was the U.S. Marshal to stop the troops from murdering the Mormons when they were moving to Salt Lake City. Anyway, that's another story. But they monitor. Under that agreement, they still monitor, the federal government does, the oil. They monitor other things, the minerals that are extracted to where supposedly the Native Americans who live there on that tribe are allowed to participate in the revenue. And that's money in their pocket to buy food with, and et cetera. That's one of the ways they make money. But I've noticed there is one hell of a lot of fraud in the oil area of it that needs to be cleaned up. Our government, the shadow government, the deep state, it's referred to, I would suggest that people go to my website, stuweb.com, under breaking news column. I just posted it in the past few days, and it says CI officer, that's Schiff, Kevin Schiff. He's a former CIA. I listened to that video. I said, my God, this guy's right on. I'm going to interview him, okay, because he's laying it out. Now, there was a couple subjects. One was 911. He dropped a hint, but he avoided laying out too much information. But he talks about all this crap that has gone on, shadow government created over here, another one over here in this agency, one in the NSA, one in the CIA, one in the FBI, one in all the government agencies, and they're there to monitor people, screw with people, and screw up any kind of investigation into real life matters. We're taxpayers. We pay their salary, but yet they don't do anything for the people, is the problem that we have, in my opinion, of government today. It's been infiltrated. It's been taken over. And I think Schiff really laid it out. Oh, my God. Everybody's got to watch that video. But isn't this about what you found, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, it's I always, so frequently in the time I've been doing this, I keep hearing the term how South Dakota is basically the Wild West. And the
Wild West.
Yeah, it's like
anything
there's
goes.
So much. Like our state government shows such a serious lack of restraint and as far as their dealings. And when you sit here and you start to watch their tactics, they're about as like predictable as anything. Once you establish their patterns, it's like, I mean, they've had the majority of South Dakotans just spoon fed for so long that they just, all they know to do is follow what's being said. But it was through the widow of a former coworker of mine who was killed. Her husband was killed on the job. And was the biggest story in South Dakota for basically the better part of a year. And then on one occasion, when there's due to be stories about her husband continuing, it was an employee with the Sioux Falls affiliate KELO. They were talking about her husband, and the response was, like, we can't do any more stories about your husband. And she's like, why? It's huge. It's the biggest, one of the biggest stories in the state. And the reply that she got from the KELO employee was that Peer doesn't want us to. So,
who's Peer?
Peer is the state capital of South Dakota.
In other words, they were referring to Gov.
Yep.
Okay, so what you have is a whistleblower. You've discovered all this stuff, especially centered around these family members that are on these reservations, because they're targeting the Indians because they're making a fortune off these kids. Locking them up, taking them away from the parents. Sometimes they're even killing parents. I mean, I've seen the videos. I was here when you made the tape and the whole bit. I've heard the stories. I've read them. I've seen them. And they're up on my internet site. And one radio show that we did, there's if you go back to the original date, anyone listening, you'll find all the links and the stories underneath that on the breaking news bar. But go to the breaking news to find when Paul was there, and then go back, and it's got all those links, all those depths. But Paul, I met Billy Jack Peltier.
Yeah.
The guy's been in jail for 38, I think it was 38 or 39 years now, folks. Illegally. All he did was blew the whistle to the FBI good guys that the bad guys were stealing oil on behalf of the Bushes and siphoning it off the oil reservation. And the two bad guys that get caught by the two good guys shoot and kill the two good guy cops, FBI, and they blame Peltier. And he's been in jail ever since. He's got one of the most powerful attorneys, Ramsey Clark, that's in this nation that we have left that's clean, and he can't get him out of jail.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, I've been pretty familiar with that story as one point in time when I was working for the South Dakota State Penitentiary. I had one of Peltier's descendants was in there at the time, and so he was able to kind of tell me, just basically introduce me to the case, because me being from Oregon, it wasn't something that I was overly
right.
familiar with. But yeah, he made mention of Peltier, and you start to learn the backstories from that whole thing. And it's like, you just can't fathom how when you had all these people that were. Like I watched the documentary Incident at Ogallala, and here it is, it's spelling it out, and so you had these agents involved with these two agents that were killed, and yet he's the only one incarcerated for the whole event.
Yeah. Now, if you were in the legislation, which it seems that the legislation is all involved here, that means the local state congressmen and senators and the governor, and everybody seems to be involved because everything's just hunky-dory in their opinion. Because businesses as usual, they can rob and loot, they got their trusts set up, and they're getting money out of social services, they're getting it right out of the state's budget. Now the federal budget to fund these different trusts and so forth, that the money, nobody, it's unaccountable.
Yeah.
How much is the amount of money? Have you ever looked at the number each year?
Basically, with what I learned just from the first report that I ever saw, which was a report that was, you can go on YouTube, and it's a source called South Dakota Exposed, and it's an attorney with the Lakota Law Project named Daniel Sheehan, and he was the one that basically was kind of talking about it on YouTube. And according to him, it was 741 Native American kids taken the first year to the tune of $79,000 a piece. And if you were to extrapolate that out, that's $58 million that goes into the Department of Social Services budget that off of the back of these Native American kids, and that's just one year. So
but they got to snatch these Native American kids from their own homes, in their own city, these reservations. They snatch the kids illegally from the parents, so they can get them into the program, say their mental cases, whatever that they do to them, and then they get them hooked on drugs, and then they turn them loose later. Many of them are adopted out, which then that's another big fraudulent thing that they got going on. This thing with what do they call it, foster care or something. I mean, it's just one game after another after another. And then they're murdering their parents, relatives that are reporting this going on. And this is just like business as usual.
So,
now,
I mean,
the question real quick I'd have is, if you were a congressman or a senator, which you're an honest guy, and you'd make a hell of a good congressman or senator or judge or whatever else, because you're pretty straight from what I understand after meeting you a couple times and the whole bit, getting to know you.
Yeah.
Now, Paul, if you were a congressman and you just won election, what would you do? Would you start trying to change things?
It's like basically you would have to get federal involvement to the core of this, and certainly not the, like, you wouldn't want, like, a helping hand from the Biden administration. You'd have to wait till somebody vastly more legit to come in. But yeah, just, I mean, it needs to be addressed to the core of this, because it's like, it's also money that is coming in to these agencies, the agencies that the Title 19 funding. It's like, I was given audits of the facility that I used to work for, and it doesn't take a trained eye. I mean, I can introduce, like, show the audits for this. It was at the time about 130, 140 bed facility, and the director of the facility at the time, this was 2015, I was given audits for that year and then the previous years. And so then when I was given these audits, I could hand them over to I'll say a grade schooler, because I believe like grade schoolers could distinguish a difference. You don't even need to know the information on there. You can just look at how the audits read differently. And if you look at the 2015 audit, it was the last year that I was at this facility, and I remember my supervisor coming into a program meeting, and he says, "We passed our reviewer audit with zero deficiencies." Now, never in the history of America has a 130 bed facility passed a reviewer audit for Title 19 funding with zero deficiencies. But that was what was conveyed to us. And yet they found a location and like wrote up deficiencies at a location where there supposedly wasn't a resident there. But at the time there was a resident there. It was a gentleman who was in his who was suffering from dementia, who would scream on his dorm all day and had the other residents on his dorm making threats to harm him. So they got him out of the area, put him in an isolated location by himself. And ultimately, like they moved him to a different location on campus. But the one part of this this audit that they had issues with was the location where he was being staged at. And so I have the documentation that shows he was there the whole time before, during, and after this audit took place. But like I said, never in the history of the United States has a 130 bed facility passed an audit with zero deficiencies. And shortly, it was months later that they eventually said that director was willingly retired. But yet I was told by a colleague of mine who gave me these audits, later was told by a state senator that they were trying to dissuade me from going to a government operations and audit committee meeting, because they knew I was going to raise hell at that. And when they were talking with her, they said, "Why does he need to show? We've already cut the head off the snake," meaning we've already dismissed the director. It's like, why would you go to the public and say she willingly retired?
More corruption.
Yeah, absolutely.
The guy probably got his full retirement, and he just took off early. And that's usually the way they do it. The way goes trouble down the drain. But you were over there causing a little problem on the other side. They didn't like that.
Yeah, and that's basically where they tried to snow me by sending, they sent a gentleman over to take down my name and number, saying they were going to look into the allegations that I presented and see if there was any criminal activities. But I was like, no, this is, it's like something's going on here. And so they said, we want to have the head of South Dakota DCI, which is Department of Criminal Investigation, call you. And I was like, they couldn't just have a field agent. They had to have the head of DCI call me. So it's like, yeah, something's fishy about that. But that ultimately led me to where I made contact with, I got a call from this gentleman, but I let it go to voicemail. And so then when I got the head of DCI, what his name was, is Brian Gortmaker. So when I got his name, I plugged it into Google, and it brought up a lawsuit that he was involved with. And this lawsuit was a sexual harassment suit. While he wasn't the one who was doing the harassing, he was involved in basically basically creating an environment where the female agent that brought this forward, I mean, she was like then pushed out of her field agent job. And
I know no names, but I know who you're talking about. She is famous.
Yeah. And so she ends up getting pushed out of her position to where she was doing putting the Medicare Medicaid fraud division, and ultimately kept away from her family for quite some time. And if you can go on online and find parts of the trial where it talks about how you had four DCI agents.
It doesn't make any difference. You might as well mention her name. She's out there. She's a private investigator now. So,
yeah.
And she's a good gal. I've dealt with her, but go ahead.
Put her name out there. Yeah, it's Laura Kaiser.
She's in Aberdeen. She's in Aberdeen, listed as an attorney and private investigator, and she's damn good.
Yeah, and so I ultimately came into contact with her, and you go and you find these reports, and you see where four DCI agents met in Melgard Park in Aberdeen with the intent of creating a character assassination to try and develop a backstory that would slander Laura Kaiser. And so thankfully her case was pushed all the way to federal court, which I believe she ultimately had to have known that she wasn't going to win anything here in South Dakota, because that's how corrupt the court system is. And so she pushes this all the way into federal court, and she was looking at a case where she was only suing the state for $75,000, and they eventually came up with a verdict, and Laura didn't win $75,000. The jury deliberated, came back, found the state of South Dakota guilty of these charges, and the state was instructed to pay Laura, I believe it was $1.2 million.
Was it $1.2 or $1.5 million, something like that?
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, but substantially more than, she was just, I mean, according to the one conversation I had, was that she was so, in truth, I don't know if, I can't remember if it was a conversation or if I saw a video, but ultimately I heard her talk where she said she was so happy to have won justice for her case. She didn't even hear the amount that she was awarded. She just was thrilled that the justice was finally served. So, I mean, she was...
That seems to be her nature. I met her husband and talked with him in person. Enough said.
Yeah, and so with everything that she went through, she was awarded just justification for all her torments that she went through. And it's like I've dealt with so many other people in South Dakota who, if they've tried speaking out rightfully against cases that are obviously where it's evident that there's wrongdoing, the state will attack them like there's no tomorrow. And the biggest one that I recall having heard is what's referred to as, and this took place in Aberdeen as well, it's referred to as the Medi rape case. And to just give kind of a synopsis of this case, a gentleman by the name of Richard Medi, I believe it was, he had these Native American foster kids in his home with his wife. And basically it was discovered that, and you'll have to forgive the terminology, but this is what has come up. Richard Medi created an ongoing game with his foster daughter which was called Blowjobs or Beatings. She had to make the choice whether or not she was going to give him a blowjob or receive a beating for it. So this abuse was taking place for the better part of 10 years. And when this was discovered, suddenly the state pulls these kids out of the home. Manny himself is facing 23 felony counts, including multiple counts of rape, and his wife was facing like 3 or 4 charges herself. And so the kids are pulled out, and they're put into different foster homes. And out of nowhere, are now like the guy who was returned to the South Dakota Attorney General position, Marty Jackley, intervenes, and lo and behold, the 22 of the 23 counts against Richard Meddy are wiped away. He is now serving a 15-year stint in Springfield, the prison in Springfield. All of the counts against Richard Meddy's wife were completely absolved. And then the kids were put back into the foster home with Meddy's wife. And so when the child advocate and Shirley Schwab, and I believe he was the assistant state's attorney, his name was Brandon Talaferro. These were the two that were most emphatically advocating for these kids. And lo and behold, in order to push back when these people were trying to take care of these children, suddenly they're faced with like witness tampering charges and looking at basically in upwards of 20, 30 years apiece for witness tampering with these kids who were in the crosshairs of this abuse. And so, according to what I've learned, these people paid $250,000 apiece pretty much to maintain their freedom. And she came out publicly a while back after Marty Jackley lost the governor race to Kristi Noem. She felt in the clear, and she went on went out publicly and spoke out against what had taken place against her. Shirley Schwab did. But I saw a clip one time on YouTube where she was basically held a press conference to speak out against what took place with her case. And she, on this YouTube clip, she was going around the room. She was basically pointing out who each reporter was with all these like different entities with the state media. And she was highlighting who these people were. And not only was the press conference never released here in South Dakota, but the story was pulled off of YouTube. This became the second time that I had seen a press conference involving malfeasances by the state, basically receiving a media shutout. And I've learned of several cases since that are not getting any kind of featured reporting with South Dakota media. And the other case that I was talking about was an incident where a 17-year-old was put into the Custer Star Academy back when it was open in 2013. It was his first offense of smoking marijuana in truancy. Now, most states, most cases, that is a slap on the wrist first time and make it community service and certainly like a lot of counseling would take place. But not with South Dakota. They basically had his mom sign what was called a CHINS petition, a child in need of supervision. They this basically gave the state the right. They took this kid, his name was Brady Fulkins, and they sent him across the state because he lived in Brookings and Custer is on the complete opposite side of the state. So we're looking at five and a half hour drive. So he goes and he's put into the Custer boot camp and he's just months away. Because I believe he was put in October and in February he would have been an adult. So he was sent to the Custer boot camp and he was put on this medication called minocycline. And minocycline is a derivative of doxycycline, which he had had previous reactions to. And so he's put on this acne medication and it's evident right after he gets put on it that he's starting to have some complications. You can see it in his journal entries. You can see it just in a lot of his...
What would they give him doxycycline for?
It was just for acne. It's an acne medication that he had previous reactions to.
Well, but, I took, because when I got anthrax, I took two 45-day supplies they could only issue of 500 milligram twice a day of doxycycline because of Garth Nicholson, the doctor, talked to my doctor because I was tested and they found out I had been anthraxed out of Adams County Jail where they falsely arrested me. Now this was in 95 after I filed my grand jury demand. That happened just shortly thereafter and Al Martin got arrested, the Iran-Contra whistleblower, and he got anthraxed too. But they hit 28 of us. And Russell Welch, the highway patrolman I used to talk to all the time when I was hiding from the FBI, giving the Arkansas-connected stuff, they anthraxed him and killed him in 86. Darlene Novager, former FBI operative, and there's a video of her up on my video bar. She got anthraxed and ended up in 84, I think it was, the year before I got hit, but she ended up dying later. I think she survived about 5 or 6 years, but I'm telling you what, it was the same bullshit. Once you're hit, it screws your immune system. Boy, I'm telling you what, but that doxycycline, it was so bad, the strength of this stuff, that it started turning my tongue black, if you can believe that. I mean, it's just
like what ended up happening with Brady is it basically was compromising his immune system. And so right around Christmas time, his mother makes the notifies him that she's going to be coming out for Christmas. Like this was the weekend before, so we're looking at December 21st. So she drives five and a half hours all the way across the state and arrives at the Custer facility. And when she walks in the door, she asks for Brady, and the gal at the desk kind of didn't know what to do, and that's when she was notified that her son was at the hospital. She hadn't been notified at any point in time prior to this occurrence that he was having any kind of health issues. And so, needless to say, the mother, her name is Dawn, she was in quite the tirade about, not being notified about her kids, so... they told her he's at the hospital, and she's like, well, I don't know where the hospital is. So she receives an escort by a police officer down to the hospital. When she got to the hospital, there sits her son, and he's completely yellow, absolute jaundice to the... Yeah. And so he's battling that, so she goes up to him and is talking with him. Meanwhile, the hospital officials and the Custer... Star Academy officials kind of go behind the wall, and eventually they come out and they say, well, we're going to send him to a facility where he can get better care. And so being in Custer, you would think that Rapid City wouldn't be that far, but they don't make the decision to send him to the Rapid City. They get a care flight to take them all the way back to Sioux Falls. The other really unique part about this is that they didn't allow his mother to join him on the flight. They made her drive all the way from Custer all the way back to Sioux Falls. And when she arrived back in Sioux Falls, her brother-in-law, I believe it was, met her in the parking lot, flagged her down, and says, you need to get up here. So they get her in the elevator, go up to the floor where her son is, and the door is open, and there they are doing chest compressions on her son. And so on December 21st, 2017, or 2013, make no mistake about it, Brady Folkins was killed by the state of South Dakota, and they've been covering it up ever since. The pathologist who his mother found, who she didn't know him at the time, but just needed some pathologist to take a look at the material she had, because she looks, because the state came back and said that Brady died of a parvovirus, and to, like, a lot of people would take issue with that right away. But she had this pathologist look over, and he was kind of, he didn't quite believe the grieving mother, if she was looking into it, if she had anything. He didn't know really what to believe. But he looked at it himself, and he's like, she's right. She is absolutely right. There's no way that this kid died in the fashion that the state said that he died. So he took a blind copy of the autopsy and began sending it out of state without his name attached or anything like that. And the other pathologists who look over this autopsy agreed with this Lars Onning about his version as to how Brady died, and not the state of South Dakota's version. And so, but he went publicly in the Argus Leader about his feelings about the state of South Dakota, and certainly their findings of the Brady Folkins autopsy. And it wasn't long after this that suddenly a report from, like, the state discovered some report from 20 years prior where Dr. Onning had come forward and says that in certain cases you have pathologists will corroborate each other's story even if it's maybe not entirely accurate. And so because he created a crisis of confidence in how South Dakota, like, it basically was when he created concern about the public trust and how they would have trust in the government, it was pretty evident that the Attorney General Marty Jackley was getting ready to try and go after his license, and Dr. Onning knew what was up, so he just said, it's like, they're coming for it anyway, I might as well forfeit it. So he forfeited his license. And the other thing that I know that was really unique about this case was that they did have a press conference with all the affiliates there for it in front of Chris Yenom's office when she was when she was the representative in Washington for South Dakota, but her office was in Sioux Falls, so they had a press conference in front of her office, and I actually do have that picture, and I'll send it to you, Stu.
Okay.
And so when they had this press conference, all the affiliates were there, and in and amongst the people who were there was Brady's general practitioner. Brady's general practitioner was by the name, her name was Annette Bosworth, and a lot of people got to know the name Annette Bosworth because it was probably, I think it was 2012, somewhere in that time frame, where she was going to run for South Dakota State Senate against South Dakota State Senator and former South Dakota Governor Mike Rounds. And so Mike Rounds is the one who put Marty Jackley in the position of Attorney General. And so when she was running against Mike Rounds, she had actually left the state at one point in time, and I believe she was in another country, and had somebody sign a petition. And it was my understanding that it was improper protocol and should have been some form of a slap on the wrist. Well, they eventually came after her with election fraud charges, and so she was looking at some 30 years and all sorts of, they basically took a slap on the wrist and turned it into capital punishment almost. And so basically anybody who is, but Annette Bosworth was there at this press conference for Brady Folkins, basically to say he was a perfectly healthy kid. And so, but ultimately, anybody that has tried to chime in and speak in on the behalf of Brady Folkins has met huge backlash with the state. The mother herself actually was looking at stalking charges because of some narrative that the state created where she was supposedly harassing the actual pathologist for Brady's autopsy, and then the lawyer who represents the state. And so these were the two men that supposedly were indicated that she was being an issue. So all of a sudden she's facing stalking charges. And I remember just seeing in the quote in the paper, it seemed just almost too good to be true. She just was sitting there saying, it's like, they're saying I was at this location on this date, and it's like, I wasn't doing anything down in Sioux Falls at this time. I was at home watching Survivor on TV.
Typical stuff.
Yeah.
Now, Paul, we're getting down the wire here, and I got a neighbor that's getting ready to age his call. And getting ready to push some snow, and I need the snow moved so I can get my car out of the garage in the next couple of days.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, it's nasty in your state where I'm at right now. I don't like this weather, folks. I liked Las Vegas temperatures. I loved Dallas temperatures.
I've been here 20 years and I've never seen a winter drag on like this one is. This one's a whole nother animal.
Is it? Well, it's my first. Well, South Dakota, I did that one house during the winter down there in Yankton, but I'm up in the northern part, up in the northeast, and Long Lake near Aberdeen. And I'm telling you what, folks, the snow doesn't disappear off the ground like Kansas City. It just piles up and gets harder. And the days we've had, a couple, three, four, 30s, it melts it and turns it to ice. And the deer are walking on top of it. And it's 3 and 4 feet deep up here. I'm like one lady up here. She's right in a wind tunnel that blows in off a big field. She had about an 8-foot snowdrift around her entire house. I said, oh, my God. I went over and checked on her. The other neighbor took his bulldozer over there and cleaned a path out that she could get out of her house. This is Alaska that I'm living in compared to, I like Florida weather. I'm getting old, Paul, but if you could conclude this during the next couple, 3 minutes.
Yeah. All I know is that I didn't start investigating South Dakota until 2016, and Brady Folkins was the first case that I learned about, and it came through a gal who had seen me on TV because I'd gone on local television and blew the whistle. And I owe this gal, Jennifer, an immense amount of credit because she found me through Facebook Messenger and basically introduced me to the name Brady Folkins. And because I wasn't getting that through South Dakota media. They've shut down so many different stories, and in one case that I've worked on is the murder of a woman by the name of Alicia Humble, and her story was actually taken by the ID Discovery on a program they have called Still a Mystery. Her story was one of their episodes, and when we had discussions with their producers, we were telling them the time frame of when Alicia was killed, and it's happened repeatedly, not just with Alicia's story, but certainly with other stories that are that basically represent some pretty nefarious tactics taking place by South Dakota. But the producers for ID Discovery were looking to do as much research on Alicia's story as possible, and they discovered that the stories that immediately followed the timeline of Alicia's death, she was killed on June 1st, 2015, and you cannot find articles that are on the days that followed. The same thing happened with the family that was killed in the Gear Up scandal. If you go to their time frame when they were killed, the days that immediately follow, go to dead links. You cannot go to those links anymore and find any
in other
information.
Words, they're covering
so,
up like they have been on Facebook and Google and Twitter before the election. If anybody put up anything against Joe Biden or his son, his perverted son, Hunter, the criminal. The guy needs to be charged with espionage, all kinds of shit. I mean, if I were a prosecutor, that guy would be in jail right now, okay, in handcuffs. And the charges would be so severe that he'd be looking at the death penalty.
Because the amount
and
of stuff
that's
that,
what
that...
needs to be done in a lot of these states, because we have a federal law. It's 18 U.S.C. 4, 18 United States Code 4, Federal Reporting Crime Act. And if you know of a crime that's been committed and you did not report it, you're in violation of that act. That's about 2.5 to 5 years in jail. Now, for each one of these public officials up here that are in South Dakota that have been involved in criminal activity, every one of them need to be charged and removed from office. Is that about the true statement?
100%. Yeah, it's just, I mean, with all the, I think as soon as they do an actual audit here, the feds do an actual audit here in South Dakota, they're going to see just a ridiculous amount of money that's never gotten to where it was supposed to. And I believe that our entire audit system in South Dakota has been corrupted for some time. I have the audits from the developmental center where I used to work. And it, like I said, you can introduce these to I would say a grade schooler to look at just the differences in the audits. It's all about like the lack of information.
Okay,
maybe what we
need to do is you get me the audits. I'll get them posted up on my website. But what we need to do is right here and now under 18 U.S.C. 4, the Federal Reporting Crime Act. You're reporting to the state agencies and the United States government, because this show is monitored and I'm monitored. You're reporting to them that these crimes are going on, and I'm reporting to them that I'm acknowledging the fact that I've seen evidence that you have that shows that these crimes have been committed. And under 18 U.S.C. 4, this is the only way, because you've gone to all these different agencies. You've done everything without saying anymore and putting yourself in a big box deeper than you are, okay? But you can't get any place with anything to do with the government now. Is that pretty much a fair statement?
Yeah, and it's like, I know that I'm not the only one, because it's like the one thing that I learned from Laura Kaiser was when I first introduced myself to her and I was explaining all the stuff that I was doing and who they were kind of sending to speak with me. And I basically told her outright, it's like, and I know the agency, the Department of Criminal Investigation, that I said, and I know DCI is dirty. And she's like, you're damn right they are. And ever since then, it's like when I did a 2-year investigation of abuses of children at a facility that was, privatized facility with the state, there was the discovery of the fact that the state's attorney was the registered agent. So all this abuse the state was well aware of, and they did nothing. And when it was reported, Christy Noem says, oh, we got to get to the bottom of this. And that was 2018, and it's been nothing but crickets ever since. So she is the queen of saying
of cover up.
Yeah, yep. She
okay, so she
is.
needs to have someone do a complete rectal exam on her. And what I mean by that is they need to look into every detail about this woman and her criminal activity that she has been doing against the people of South Dakota.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any last statements? We're right at the hour, on the hour. Any last statement, Paul?
I thank all the listeners for every ounce of interest that they put into this, and certainly I'll get all that information so that you can.
I'll hook it up under the link on this radio show on Breaking News.
Yep,
but also, I want you to give out your email a couple times. Give it out where people can get a hold of you.
Yep, and so my email is DiddyX25 at yahoo.com. That is DiddyX25 at yahoo.com.
Now, and go ahead.
Yep, and so that's just the cleanest way to get in touch with me, because thankfully it was Laura Kaiser who taught me that that emails is one of the safest ways to correspond and stay off the state's radar. So,
well, I like her. I think she's a good gal. I've met her husband, and I've talked to him in person, but I've never met her or talked to her direct. But anyway, yeah,
she has a reputation. I got to meet her for 2 hours at her place the one night, and I wouldn't be here without her
help.
The advice she gave me that one day and her expertise, it's like it's paved the way for me to keep doing what I'm doing and not step on any landmines, so to speak.
Yeah, now she would be a good candidate for somebody to say, hey, why don't you be the next governor or next senator of the state of South Dakota?
Yeah, and make her change. Husband was in the legislature for quite some time,
so
she would be a great resource, and I hope that she considers it one day. Certainly once the black cloud is lifted, I think she would be a great candidate.
Yeah, but it's going to take the people of South Dakota to be hearing this and do something about it and get involved, and Paul's the guy to get involved with to try to make change. And, you know, some of you American, Native Americans out here, you need to come together with Paul and start solving problems on your own Indian reservation, start prosecuting these people for what they're doing. With that said, I want to thank you, Paul Register, and it's DiddyX25 at yahoo.com, correct?
Yep.
Thanks again, Paul. Appreciate it. You have a good one.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.